Well, good morning. Hey, there's about a third of you in here, but hopefully you guys are excited to be here, as excited as I am for the conclusion of this series that we have been working through called Four. And whether or not you have been here throughout the past 4 weeks, this series revolves around this truth in your life and in my life. For each of us individually, but what we also believe God is calling us to collectively as an organization, as Core Community Church. You see, we believe with all of our hearts that God's mission and purpose for our lives was always meant to be for us to be for others, was always meant to be for our city, for our neighborhoods, and for our world. And the reality is that as we look at that calling, we often ask the question, how do I find myself being for the world when the world is not for me? And we kicked off this entire series by underlining this reality, that we are being called to be for our world, regardless of if the world is for us, regardless of if we believe the world around us deserves it or not. That we are called to be for our world simply because God is for us. That no matter what your life or your past looks like, that we have a God who stands in our corner no matter what. And he's calling us to that exact same thing for the world around us. You see, what we know is this disappointing fact. That for far too long, the local church, and furthermore, if we say the local church, what that also means is each of us as local Christians, for far too long, the local church has been known for what it's against. And we believe that it's time to change that. We believe that it's time to go in a new direction. We believe that it's time for us to begin to change the world, that that is what God wants from us, and that is what he is calling us to. But if you're anything like me, you've been here over the course of this series, or this morning you hear me say for the very first time that I believe with all of our hearts that individually and collectively we are being called to change the world. And the tension that rises up in me when I hear that statement is this: is it possible? I want some proof that this can actually be done. And here's the incredible news. We have proof that it has been done before. Think about it. A little over 2,000 years ago, when we look back in history, this thing called Christianity wasn't even a thing. There was no such thing as Christianity. And then this man named Jesus Christ walked onto the pages of history. And with him, he brought this new movement. He brought this upside down faith, this new way of living that was supposed to impact the world in a way that nothing else had ever impacted it before. And because of that new movement and the followers, the disciples, the crowds that gathered around him that decided to take that movement out into the world after he was gone, this thing called Christianity began to morph and spread to every corner of the earth. That effectively, when we look over the course of 2,000 years and we recognize that something didn't even exist 2,000 years ago, and now we have this thing called Christianity that has touched every nation and every tongue in our world, what we recognize is some amount of world changing happened once. And when I think about that, there's this question that comes to mind. What was it about first century Christians that made their faith so irresistible? What was it about first century Christians that made their faith so contagious, so compelling? And if we find the answer to that question, what we find also is that we are better suited in turn to change the world just as they changed the world. Because newsflash, and today is going to be difficult across the board. This was one of my most difficult weeks to write and to speak because it convicted me. For every single one of us, what we begin to realize is this, is that the calling over the course of 2,000 years has not changed. That God is still calling you and me to impact our world by loving our world like nobody else does. But there's a dilemma that rises up. You see, as we think about impacting our world and loving our world, what we automatically see, we don't have to look too far into our world to really quickly realize this one thing, that we live in a broken, dark world, that there is hurt all around us, and that things aren't going the way that they should or the way that we want them to. We find ourselves up against obstacles in which we look at changing the world and bringing the hope and the love of Christ into the world. And what we see is this, as we see a world that's full of distractions and options, in which everyone around us and everyone we hang out with has chosen to follow all of those distractions and all of those different options and make them their top priority. We find countries in which Christianity is being persecuted. We find families in which the value system of Christianity is being proved to either be not worth it or just not real at all. And for some of us, we have this fear that rises up in us at times like this, right? This fear that as Christians, as a part of the local church, that we can see on the not-so-distant horizon that maybe some of our rights and some of our freedoms of the church in this nation will slowly be taken from us. And we look at all of those different elements that are happening in the world around us, and what we begin to decide is this, is that maybe changing the world like those first century Christians just isn't doable. Maybe we find ourselves living in a post-Christian society in which we're just supposed to put our head down and just charge forward and just worry about ourselves. Several years ago, there was this man named John O'Sullivan. He was a famous writer, famous journalist. And he began to study what was happening in our world and in our country. And what he quickly began to find is what we just talked through. This reality that our society, that our world was quickly turning into a post-Christian society. And what that meant is that Christianity as a driving force was in the rearview mirror. That day after day, less and less people were becoming Christ followers. And as he began to see what was happening, he began to dig deeper into why this was happening. And what he found was this, and I find this so absolutely incredible, and I wanted to share it with you this morning. John O'Sullivan, in his study, he wrote this as a conclusion. Check this out. A post-Christian society is not merely a society in which agnosticism or atheism are the prevailing fundamental beliefs. No. A post-Christian society is one that we find rooted in the history, culture, and practices of Christianity, but in which the religious beliefs of Christianity have either been rejected or worse, forgotten. What was John O'Sullivan saying in this quote? He was making the observation that as we look into our world and we see this thing called Christianity fading, it isn't that atheism is rising or agnosticism is being taught in more and more families. It's that our faith is being looked at by the world around us, and what they are finding is this, is that your faith isn't that compelling. Your faith isn't that irresistible. Your faith maybe just isn't worth following, and they have either forgotten it or just flat out ignored it. You see, when we use the excuse that it's the obstacles that are keeping us as individuals and as an organization from being world changers, what we neglect to see is that over 2,000 years ago, dare I say, there were more obstacles in the way than what there are today. That those first century Christians were up against a Roman government that absolutely hated the Christian faith. That they had operated for hundreds of years under the premise that we'll just let the Jews be over there and take care of themselves and govern themselves, and we'll just kind of watch over them, but as long as they stay in their own corner, they're fine and they can do whatever they want to do. And then we see this shift begin to take place as Jesus enters onto the scene, and they begin to realize maybe we can't let them do whatever we want to do. Maybe we need to stomp this out right now. And it wasn't just the Roman government. It was the religious beliefs that Christianity was birthed out of. The Jewish religious leaders, as this new thing called Christianity began to spread and began to rise, began to believe that it was their sole purpose to stamp this thing out and to make sure that it went away. We see it in the life of Paul. Paul, a man who wrote most of the New Testament, you know what most of his early life was spent doing? Hunting down as many Christians as he possibly could. Embarrassing them and stoning them and even killing them in the streets. We find a religion that was based upon their leader being hung on a cross, and many of the disciples that would follow being persecuted and hung on their own cross as well. We see a belief system that was set up in absolute contrast of everything the Roman world believed. See, the Roman world was centered on a belief that it was all about my ego, all about my standing, all about me looking the best that I can, all about how much pride do I have in myself. And yet here comes this guy named Jesus launching this thing called Christianity that was about this upside down faith, that was about something different and something better than life being just all about me. Dare I say that brought something to the table that once and for all gave meaning and purpose to life here on earth. Because here's what's so incredible. Jesus walked onto the pages of history and he looked around at the Roman world and see if this sounds familiar to you. And what he saw was Roman citizen after Roman citizen, governmental leader and ruler after governmental leader and ruler, rising the corporate ladder, acquiring more, making something of themselves, and yet day after day stepping back and asking the same question. Is this really all there is to life? Isn't there more? Because they've told me it's about getting more to feel more meaningful and to have more purpose in my life, and yet I've acquired more and I still don't feel like my life is very meaningful. I still don't feel fulfilled. I still don't feel like I have purpose. And there was this switch that began to go off. This switch that began to make first century Christianity so contagious and so compelling, because they began to live a different life that was about more than just themselves. You see, what they realized is the same thing we must realize today to finish off this series. That in order for us to change the world, we must find ourselves becoming more concerned about connecting with people rather than correcting people. Because we all have that tendency inside of us, that human nature that begins to rise up, that wants to make our lives about us, and that wants to feel justified in our actions, and wants to feel right about what we believe and what we say. And so at every turn, in order for us to feel the best about ourselves, we believe that it's all about being on the defense, and it's all about correcting others, and we use whatever platform we have in conversation or social media to correct others. And yet we find this creating a fissure in our ability to effectively change the world. All of us know this reality if we've ever had adult kids. See, for many of us, when our kids grow up and they become adults, we find ourselves taking the exact same parental approach that we did for their entire childhood. That for their childhood, it was all well and good. We wanted to teach them the right value system. We wanted to teach them the right way to act. We wanted to teach them how to respect other people. And so we got in this habit of constantly correcting our kids. And guess what? When they were kids, that was an appropriate thing to do. When they were five and they were in the discipline phase of parenting, it was right to discipline them and to correct them. But then they grew up and they became adults. And all we did was hang on to the same way in which we parented them. And then we stand back and we wonder why at every turn when they're not raising our grandbabies the way we think that they should, and they're not making the right decisions in their job that we want them to make, and so we jump on their back and we correct them and we tell them how they should do it, we wonder why there's this distance between us and our kids. We wonder why there's this separation in our relationship with them. It's because in our relationships with others, it was always supposed to be about connecting, not correcting. That reality rings true in every relationship of our adult lives. That we are being called to reach into others' lives, to become all things to all people, to do what we can to show people that we are for them, that we are for our city, that we are for our world. And here's what's so incredible, is that not only does the world around us change when we take that approach, but when we are willing to take that approach, and I know it seems counterintuitive, our own lives actually get better. We actually find more meaning and more purpose in not making our lives all about me. And there's this pastor that I greatly respect. His name's Andy Stanley. And as he was thinking and talking and writing about this concept, he wrote this passage. And I thought it was so fundamental and so incredible that I had to share it with you all. Andy Stanley wrote this: becoming a means to an end is what gives life meaning and purpose. Live for yourself and you'll only have yourself to show for yourself. See, for a long time, right, if you're anything like me, we've believed that our life takes on the most amount of meaning when we are the end. When life is all about me getting more, me getting what I want, me feeling right, me being served. But what if I told you that we weren't created to be the end? What if I told you that we were created for something better than that? That we were created to be a means to a better end. And we find ourselves as a part of that cause and that mission to know everything in life wasn't meant to point to us, but we were supposed to use our life to be for others, to point to something, someone better than us. That our life, like Andy says, finally finds the meaning and the purpose that we have been searching for. Because when we take an honest look, here's what you know just as well as I do. That for much of our adult life, we spend it desiring just a little bit more meaning. We want to feel fulfilled. We want to feel like we're doing something on purpose. Not only did Andy say this is the way, but we see the man that we're supposed to follow, a man named Jesus, step onto the scene of your life and my life and say, you want to live a rich and satisfying life, a life that's like no other? Then it requires you to change your way of doing life and understand that you were created to be a means to my end, not the end. And we see Jesus begin to make this case with his disciples in the book of Mark, chapter 8. It's where we're going to dive into first this morning. If you haven't done so already, this is an incredible opportunity for you to grab your weekly. It's what you got when you came in this morning. And inside of that weekly, if you crack it open, you'll find a notes page. We've designed it specifically for you to help you follow along as we move through the text. You can even grab a pen from the seat back in front of you and fill in some blanks as we go, some things that you can hang on to that will challenge you and push you forward throughout your week as you struggle with whether or not to be for others. But as we dive into this passage in which Jesus really presents this new way of living that leads to a better life, that gives us more meaning and more purpose, this is how we see this moment go, starting in verse 34. Then, calling the crowd to join his disciples, he said, "If any of you wants to be my follower, you must give up your own way, take up your cross, and follow me. If you try to hang on to your life, you will lose it." Here's where it gets really upside down. "But if you give up your life for my sake and for the sake of the good news, you will save it. And what do you benefit if you gain the whole world but lose your own soul? Is anything worth more than your soul?" Jesus begins to present, man, if you want to live the best life possible, it's about giving up yourself, and you actually gain something incredible in that. And the way in which you do that is you pick up your cross every single day and you carry it. Now, what I'm about to say, brace for it, this is going to sting just a little bit. But when Jesus speaks this for us to pick up our cross, what he is not talking about here is your back pain. Sorry. Jesus is saying, I am calling you to take up your cross. This is something you willfully choose to carry every single day. It's a burden you choose to carry. And so often we look at the cross and we simply want to see the good part of the cross. Well, the cross is all about how God loves me. And yes, that's true. And yes, that's a part of what the cross means. But if we don't see the entire picture, we miss the entire power of the cross. Yes, the cross is about God's love, but it's also about his calling on your life and my life, that he modeled that this life was meant to be lived in sacrifice for somebody else. Y'all okay? That if we're not willing to see that part of the cross, then there's no point in putting crosses on top of our buildings or wearing crosses around our necks. Because the cross is about more than just God's love for us. It's about God's love that drives us to do what he did on the cross every single day. To be for people. To pick up a burden of being for our world even when it's difficult. You see, today is all about putting the nail in the coffin of our old lives. and picking up this new life for you and for me individually and for us collectively that calls us to be for others, that changes the world around us, but it also changes our own life, our own feeling of meaning and purpose that we carry with us. There is a benefit to this for us as well. But in order to drive that nail in the coffin of our own life, what we must be clear on is this. This is what it really means to be for others. This is what it really means to live out a for lifestyle, to be for our city, to be for our world. And doing that begins in this one place, that we must recognize being for others means being a means, not an end. Being for others is about being a means to an end. It means that my life and my choices was never meant to simply revolve around me. Being for people, you see, this is what we must see. Being for people is always just across the border from what's in it for me. Being for people is about making a daily choice to walk across that border and to not view our lives from the perspective of what's in it for me, but to begin to see that we are called to ask the question, what's in it for somebody else? How can I change their life? How can I change this world? How can I love them in such a way that nobody else has loved them? Because whoever devotes themselves simply to themselves will only have themselves to show for themselves. I know that's a lot of themselves in there. When we really digest that, it affects the way in which we live. If we only live for ourselves, we will only have ourselves to show for ourselves when our time here on earth is over. And don't we want so much more than that? Don't we want so much better than that? Because that's a shallow life. That's a shallow legacy. We're called to change the world, not live a life that's short of meaning and short of purpose. See, it's time to scrap the belief that we've held on for far too long, that if I want to really live, then life has to be about me and how much I get. Because Jesus came to make the opposite claim. I created you to simply be a means, a cog in the machine that points back to me and that makes your life and everybody else's life around you better. But hear me on this. When you begin to become a means to an end, what you must realize is that being for people always has a price. There is always a price attached to being for others. And before you start on this journey, you must count the cost. But in order to appropriately count the cost, you must stop believing the lies about a price that's associated with your calling in life. Because what you've believed and what human nature wants to rise up inside of you is this, is that anything that requires a price, anything that cost me something, anything that requires something of me, a price or a cost, makes me hesitate on whether or not I really want to do it. You ever found yourself there before? I know I have. But that train of thought is just an illogical train of thought. And the reason I know that is this. Think back to the very first car you bought with your own money. Think about all the blood, sweat, and tears that you gave into that factory job, into that summer work, into that place of employment that you really didn't like, but you worked so hard and you made money and you saved and you put it aside so that you could buy your very first big purchase of your own. And when you bought that car with your own money and your own hard work and your blood, sweat, and tears, what did you do? Like, you babied that 1988 Chevy Lumina with rust around every wheel that was sitting in your driveway, right? Like, you treated it like it was a Ferrari in your driveway. Like, you washed that thing by hand. You took it to the car wash every single week. There was a little scratch on it, and I know there's rust everywhere, but I got to buff that scratch out, and I got to wax it. And when it hits 3,001 miles, that baby is going in for an oil change. The way in which you treated that car was in direct contrast to the way in which you treated every car that your parents gave you for free, wasn't it? Like, the cars your parents gave you for free, like, they never sniffed a car wash. It was like, I'm changing the oil when we hit the next 10,000 miles, or when like smoke is coming up from the engine when I drive it around. Then I'll get it checked out. It's because in our lives, the things that cost us something actually bring more meaning to our lives. And the same is true in the way in which we operate in every facet of our lives. That the cost reveals the magnitude of our purpose. That the greater the price paid, the bigger the difference made. I didn't even write that one down, but you can tweet that if you want. The greater the price paid, the bigger the difference made. That there will be a price, but that price brings more meaning to our lives, more meaning to our stories. It sets us out on a mission and a purpose that allows us to change the world. But if we want to find that meaning, there is only one path to it. Being for others is the only path to meaning. You're saying, Ben, that's a pretty drastic statement. You just threw out the word only. They told us we should never use the words never or only. Do you really believe that? I do with all of my heart. I believe that Jesus came to this earth, put on human flesh, gave up everything that was rightfully his in heaven to walk on this earth, to set an example for what the best possible life could look like. And he said, I know this is a narrow path, but if you choose to follow this difficult path, it leads to the best life possible. It leads to the most meaning and the most purpose you could possibly ever want. There is this one way, and it's the example that I'm setting, that life was meant to be lived for others. He says it perfectly when we fast forward just one chapter from Mark 8 to Mark 9, verse 35. Jesus says this, whoever wants to be first, we can put a whole lot of different things in there. Whoever wants to have the best life possible, whoever wants to be first must take last place and be the servant of everyone else. What's Jesus mean here? If you want to be great, serve. If you want to live a great life, serve somebody else. Be for others, not just yourself. And I think in order for us to get to a place in which we can willingly do that, what we must begin to understand better is the meaning of sin. You see, I think for far too long, many of us, myself included, have believed that sin is simply the bad things that we do. I told you today was going to be tough. You see, sin isn't just the bad stuff we do. Sin is also the good things we don't do. It's the broken, hurting, homeless person that we choose just not to look at, because if I don't look, then maybe that means I don't have to do anything. It's the volunteering we choose not to do because I just don't have a whole lot of time right now. It's the poor person that we don't want to give up anything of ourselves or our resources to help them in their state. It's the money we choose not to give to the cause that's changing people's lives. Because we've come up with the excuse, well, maybe when I get more, maybe when I'm in a better place financially. See, sin isn't just the bad stuff that we do. It's also the things that we're being called to do that we just choose not to. The opportunities that we have to change the world that we choose to say, well, that's not about me. And if it's not about me, then I'm just guessing. I won't feel fulfilled. I won't get meaning. I won't have a purpose in this. And so I'm just going to focus on me right now. And Paul saw the example of Jesus Christ. And he saw the way in which we choose to live on a daily basis. And he said, no, you don't understand. This is what Jesus modeled. And if you want to have the best possible life, if you want to make the biggest impact, have the greatest impact on this earth, here is what it needs to look like. He writes this in Philippians chapter 2. Don't be selfish. Don't try to impress others. Be humble, thinking of others as better than yourselves. Don't look out only for your own interest, but take an interest in others too. See, as I read that passage from Paul, that's calling us to a different kind of life, I found myself wondering, what would change in my life if every single morning I woke up with this thought? When I die, what do I want people to line up and thank me for? What would change in our everyday actions if we pondered that? Will they have anything to thank me for? Will the line be very long? I still remember as a kid, growing up, my father was an independent salesman. And so on the days where he wasn't traveling, we had an office in our basement, a pretty nice office in which he worked out of most of the time. For those of you who are older than me, you're going to laugh at this next statement, but I don't know any better way to describe it. I grew up in an era where you had one computer in your house, and there was no such thing as laptops. So as a kid, you know, we had the giant tower that was in place on the floor that one person could barely lift by themselves. And every night I would find myself wandering down there. It was at the time where, you know, to get on the internet, you still had to be plugged in by a cord. And every time you got on, it would make those beeping noises. Dial up, kids, you don't know what I'm talking about. But I'd find myself spending most of my night on something called AOL Instant Messenger and Napster. Napster was one of the very first music software programs like iTunes, and it was one of the very first to get busted for music piracy. But it was the thing to do. And so I spent many of my nights listening to music on Napster and talking, because I didn't have a cell phone, there was no text messaging, on AOL Instant Messenger. And I still remember vividly in my mind, every time I would go down there, my father, he had this picture on the wall beside his desk. And it was a picture that my mother had cross-stitched. And it had the picture of a dirty office, and there was some corny statement. I didn't say that in the first service because my mother was in here. But it had some corny little one-liner on there. But my father, he had attached this yellow, worn-out old Post-it note into the bottom corner of that frame. And for as long as I can remember, that Post-it note was there on the bottom corner of that frame. And on that Post-it note, my father wrote this. At the end of my life, the only words I want to hear are, and in quotation marks, he wrote, "Well done, good and faithful servant." And for those of us who have grown up in the church, we're like, yeah, that's the cliche statement that everybody says they want to hear at the end. But there was something different about what my father wrote on that paper. In my younger years, I didn't understand it. I didn't know why. It didn't have much meaning to me. But on that paper, I can still vividly remember that there was one word that he had underlined about four times. And it was the word servant. And as I look back on that, what I recognize is that my father understood something that I so often overlook. Is that in order to hear the words I want to hear from my Creator and my Savior when my time here on earth is done, for me to make the biggest impact on this world that I possibly can, and to live a life of meaning, there is one decision that is required of me every single morning when I wake up. And I can just imagine my father seeing that on the corner of that picture every morning when he would go down into his office. Who am I serving? If I want to live the best life possible, I must ask myself, who am I serving? That's what separates my life from the rest of the world. That's what makes my life more meaningful. That's what gives my life more purpose than a standard, ordinary life, than the life of everybody else around me. Am I willing to be a servant? Did your life have a purpose? Or do you only have yourself to show for it? So let's put a bow on this series quickly. Let's answer the question, what does it look like every single day to embrace a four mindset, to embrace a four lifestyle, to set out every single day to be for others? How do I put this into practice? Well, it begins here, between our ears. That embracing four means developing and maintaining a means mindset. Understanding this, and if you've gone anywhere, come back really quickly. Understanding that your greatest contribution to this world probably won't be something that you do. Your greatest contribution to this world will probably be somebody that you influence. Ben, why do you say that? Why do you believe that? Why is that so powerful for the finisher of this series? Because here's what I know. When my life is all about me, when I die, guess what? My impact on this world ends. But when my life becomes about others and being for other people, when I die, my impact on this world and my ability to change this world does not end. It lives on in the people that I have influenced. It lives on in the people that I have invested in. It lives on in the people that I have loved. It lives on in the people that I have been for. And here's what's so cool is that when we take that means mindset and we invest in others, our impact on this world doesn't even die when they die. It lives on in the people that they invest in the people that they are for, in the people that they love. You see, that's what it looks like to be for others. That's the trickle effect, the ripple effect of being for. That's the legacy effect of being for. Is that when life isn't just about myself, the way in which I change the world doesn't end when my life ends. But it only happens when we start with a means mindset. And then, in order to live this out, we must pay attention to what stirs our hearts. That we must wonder, for so many of us, when will we get to the point where we will be like Popeye? Yeah, I'm talking about that Popeye. You ever seen the old cartoon? Every single episode, there's one line that's consistent. As Popeye looks and Bluto, the enemy, has taken olive oil captive and he's doing all of these mean things, that the Popeye steps forward and he says this one line, "I just can't stand it anymore." And he goes on to drink the entire can of spinach and he puffs up. And he beats Bluto into smithereens and takes olive oil back. See, when will we reach a point in our lives where we will look out into the hurt and the brokenness and we will be able to exclaim, "I just can't stand it anymore. That I have to do something about it." And hear me on this. Being for something and seeing hurt and injustice and brokenness in our world doesn't mean using our platform to shout at the top of our lungs how against something we are. Having a for mindset means finding something that's contrary to that and using all of our strength and all of our energy to be for that thing that's in contrast to the thing that we just can't stand anymore. That's what it looks like to be for. That we find our opportunity to be for people always at the intersection of a broken heart, an opportunity, and my willingness to do something. Being for people will always be found at the intersection of a broken heart, an opportunity, and my willingness to do something. What's stirring your heart? And are you willing to do something about it? And then lastly, to keep this going, we must surround ourselves with other people who are for. See, I don't know if you've noticed this in life yet or not, but selflessness and selfishness are both equally contagious. And whatever you're catching from the people you are spending your time around. If you aren't for people, it's probably because the people in your circle aren't for people. And maybe if you feel like your life isn't meaningful and doesn't have a purpose, then maybe this is the moment to change your circle. Because I've spent a good portion of my ministry years looking students in the faces and telling them this one thing. Your friends determine the quality and direction of your life. And guess what? When you turn 18, that truth does not dissipate. It is just as true in your life as it is in the 16-year-old's life. Studies show this to be true. You are most like the five people you hang out with most. If you aren't changing the world, then maybe it's time to surround yourself with people who want to change the world. to change our circle and to surround ourselves with somebody different. Because if they're not for, it'll be darn near impossible for you to be for. God's calling us to something big, something that has the potential to change the world. But it's also something that's ridiculously simple. In John 13, he says, man, if you want to change the world, I am calling you to love others. Just as I have loved you, you must love others. And by your love, this world will know that you are my disciple. There's an inevitability that I know about this world and our life, and it is this. No matter what you do, no matter where you go, people will talk about you. And when your life ends, there will be a narrative written about your life. Guess what? We get to be in control of something. What's being written about you? There are a whole lot of things that could be written about me. One of the things that I hope rises to the surface above all else is that I was for people. Ben wasn't very smart. He wasn't a very good communicator. But my goodness, that he'd do everything he possibly could with his life and his family and his church to remove every obstacle to be for people, to love his neighborhoods and their city and their world. I mean, what do you want your legacy to be? Because if you only live life for yourself, you'll only have yourself to show for yourself. But if you want something bigger, if you want something better, if you want a greater impact, if you want to change the world, it requires you to see your life as being a means to a bigger end and recognizing that the greater the price paid, the bigger the difference made. Is that what you want? The choice is before us. Would you pray with me? Father, this morning, we thank you for being a God who loves us unconditionally, who is in our corner, no matter what our past looks like, no matter how many times we get this wrong, no matter how many times we make our life about us. God, you also loved us enough to send your Son as a greater example. An example for us to follow of how we could be for others and how being for others could not only change the world, also change the meaning and the purpose that our lives have. So God, this morning, I pray that we are willing to jump in, to do what we can do, to not miss an opportunity, and to realize that the price reveals the meaning. God, may we love others with everything we have, just as your Son did. It's in your name I pray. Amen. So what are we asking you to do? We're asking you, as this series moves into the rearview mirror, to allow next week to be this step for us individually and us organizationally to say that the fundamentals that we have laid out, the practices that we want to live out while this series goes into the rearview mirror, those things do not. And we're taking this first step out into our city, out into this world to live this out every single day. And next week is the starting point. We're asking you today to hop on to Stand for Shelby and to make sure that you get registered to be a part of Community Impact Day next Sunday. We will not be meeting in this room for our standard services. We will be gathering together really briefly, getting on our free shirts. The cost isn't even that high, right? Like, you show up, you serve for a few hours, you get a free t-shirt, you get free lunch with it, to show up with us, to be sent out. No matter what age you are, what demographic you come from, there's something for you to be able to serve well and to show our city that we love it. Let's do this. Let's be for together. Thanks so much for being here this morning. I hope that you have a great rest of your Sunday, and we hope to see you soon.